Welcome. This is Zero Point Radio Show on BBS Radio. I'm Christopher Holmes, your host and commentator for another two-hour session. I work under the logo of Zero Point, which is a term taken from mystic scholar H.P. Blavatsky from a book she wrote called The Secret Doctrine, written in 1888. And Blavatsky explains how living beings have zero-point centers. So I work under the term zero-point, because in modern physics now, the term zero-point has also come out in physics. And so there's a new in physics now, there's a new understanding of zero-point energies and zero-point fields, and these relate to these ancient teachings of Madame Blavatsky from The Secret Doctrine. So I work under the logos of Zero Point. And Zero Point, in part, it's an institute for mystical and spiritual science. And in these shows, I share with the audience mystical teachings about the origin and nature of human consciousness. That's our primary subject or topic that we deal with, the enigmas and mysteries of human consciousness, and related to that, the mysteries and enigmas about the human soul and spirit. So we explore those issues, and secondly, we explore ideas about zero points and about creation physics. You might imagine our universe, it is now believed in modern times, emerged out of what's called the quantum vacuum. So scientists think that once upon a time, before creation happened, everything was absorbed into what they call the quantum vacuum, and that things emerged out of this apparent nothingness of the quantum vacuum. And that scenario is called vacuum genesis, that the universe came out of nothingness. And you find this even in the book of Genesis. The first verses of the book of Genesis say, "And the earth was empty and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep." So even in Genesis, you find that there was a time that predated existence coming into being, and everything was absorbed in nothingness and voidness. So that concept is a vacuum genesis. And scientists think that our universe originated as a singularity, or as a, from a point source out of that vacuum. Now, what I try essentially to do is explain that human beings can be understood using these same concepts that are used in science to understand the creation of the universe. So, in a way, I say human beings, we come out of nothingness. And there's a quotation on the top of my website, and it says, "Not since God brought man out of nothingness have we ceased to be a traveler." So the idea is that somehow we also ourselves come out of that nothingness into being. We can imagine this even in terms of our own life. That makes sense, because we remember only so far back in our own lives, and before that is kind of like that nothingness. So we ourselves come into existence at a certain period in time. And that human beings similarly might have an original zero-point center, that there's a higher dimensional physics to a human being, and that we have zero-point centers. And there's this higher dimensional physics that emerges from zero-point levels and brings life and consciousness into a human being. So we also have a zero-point center. So I explore these concepts of the heart doctrine, I call it, which is, the heart doctrine is the mystical teaching that the origin of human consciousness and the I experience in the human being originate out of the heart. And I criticize modern scientific or pseudo-scientific views that the brain in the head produces consciousness. And I call that the head doctrine. So I elaborate upon the heart doctrine drawing from all kinds of mystical teachings. So I'll talk about Christianity, Kabbalah, secret doctrine, Tibetan Buddhism, many, many esoteric sources I draw upon to explain the heart doctrine and the science of the heart doctrine. And then the focus on the zero-point origins, how human beings have zero-point centers. I do invite the listener to have a look at my website at www.zeropoint.ca. I have a good selection of my writings up there. And I've just completed a revision of my most important book called The Heart Doctrine. And this week I'll be putting a new picture of the new cover. I'm using a new cover for the book, and we'll be reissuing it. I'm very pleased with the latest edition of this work. So I intend to put some of the new chapters up on my site to replace the older chapters, which actually date back several years now, and I've revised my work several times since then. So I would encourage people to have a look at my site, order the book, The Heart Doctrine, which I would argue is one of the most important books on human consciousness and the science of the soul to be produced in modern times. Okay, so today I am going to have my co-host on, my usual co-host, James Moffat, on in the first half of the show. And we have approximately 45 minutes today, and we're going to explore the zero-point teaching and the zero-point construct, because we've been saying that we would do this for the last few shows, and we keep on delaying it and putting it off, and sometimes I get too much wrapped up in the political, socio-political situation of humanity at this time on this planet. In the second half, I have a guest, fellow Mark, who will join us from the Ottawa 9/11 Truth Group, who hold monthly outings on Parliament Hill, distributing movies about 9/11 and trying to bring this issue into public awareness. So that'll be in the second half of the show. One last note, I do ask, I know there's a button up on Zero Point, through BBS where they have a PayPal button that if anyone would like to make a donation to Zero Point, I would really appreciate that. I also have a place from my site where I request donations. I do appreciate donations. And sometimes people think, oh, I must do really well and such, but in 3 years of requesting donations for my support, so far I've only received $90 over a 3 year period, which pays really just for my internet and web hosting for a month. So I don't make a lot of money, and I do appreciate any donation, no matter how small people might make. I just want to be able to continue my work and work at revising my books and such and do the teaching I do. So I do appreciate donations. Okay, so enough in that regard. And Jim is actually visiting at the moment at my home, so he's on the extension here. How James Moffat. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I'm in the next room, but it's just like being at home. I can't see you.
yeah.
I can hear you, but I can't see you. So, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah.
Okay, so I thought, Jim, why don't we try to go into the zero-point teaching a little bit today, and we have about 45 minutes to carry us up to the end of the hour, and then I'll move on after that. You have to head off. You have a family get-together, I think, in Ottawa. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I guess it's years now, I would say, Jim, that I really began to focus on this concept of zero point. I guess it goes back for me almost 20 years now when I was reading The Secret Doctrine and studying Sagan and science and kind of creation physics. Almost 20 years ago,
yeah.
We began beginning to look at the concept of zero points. But that over time has just deepened and deepened and deepened our understanding of like what that might mean and how to understand these zero point concepts. It's certainly not something that a person can readily grasp, Jim. It's something more subtle that.
It's very difficult, but at the same time, it's interesting because in the consciousness literature, even the people who incorporate esoteric or mystical teachings, I don't really know of anybody else who's sort of grasped the significance of this, and certainly no one else who's related it to the heart doctrine, and I think that's what's really unique in your work is that combination of these two things. What it does, I think, in a way, is that it provides sort of the basis for the ultimate holistic, organic, deep ecological theoretical model of consciousness. I say that because I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I've been reading this book by Fritjof Capra called The Hidden Connections, and in it he speaks about the about evolutionary theory and the rise of life, and then in the first chapter, and then in the second chapter, in the first chapter he's talking about he emphasizes the importance of nonlinear dynamics and the teaching of theoretical position of eleopriggogene and dissipative structures, and essentially what that is a mathematical model which explains how complex forms arise spontaneously, seemingly spontaneously, but they're really the result of nonlinear dynamics. And he makes a big deal about this. And in the second chapter, he talks about consciousness, and he cites, I think it's called the Santiago theory of consciousness. And what Capra's arguing in there is that this is a deep ecological position, and it overcomes the dualism of the mind-body problem, which is, as he says, has haunted Western philosophy and science for the last 300 years. But I read his chapters, and I've been rereading these first two chapters, trying to understand exactly what he says, and I don't see this at all as overcoming the mind-body problem, and I don't see it as a deep ecological position, because really, what he wants to deal with, he wants to explain everything in terms of material processes and in terms of the material realm, but he doesn't go into the higher dimensions of human consciousness or of the universe, and I think that's what's really unique in your position, is that you provide a framework in which we can understand people as multidimensional beings with the possibility of realizing themselves in a multidimensional cosmos and actually being able to apprehend these higher dimensions. And it really struck me reading Capra's work and this theory of consciousness that he was discussing, how, again, it's all based on these assumptions that somehow magically the head brain, he said, you know, at one point he says that it's known that the neurological basis, the neurological processes produce consciousness. Well, it's not known. That's the problem, you know. But nobody seems to have this perspective that rather than consciousness arising out of the head brain, that consciousness might be a universal property which exists on different levels and in different dimensions and which informs human beings. So there's this involutionary current as well as an evolutionary current. Like, I wouldn't deny at all the importance of nonlinear dynamics and dissipative structures. I think that you know, there's no doubt that these processes occur, but they've only got, I would say, that people in the traditional understanding of consciousness in Western science only have half the picture. Like, they ignore the idea of the hierarchy of creation, which is, as Ken Wilber says in one of his books, is really one of the oldest ideas in human existence, and it's only really recently that modern thinking has collapsed that hierarchy and tries to explain everything in terms of the flat land of materialism and reductionism
yes, it's atheism. Thought that material processes produce consciousness or spirit, that thing that in a way life comes from below.
Yes.
I remember Swami Prabhupada explains it this way, whereas he says in the spiritual psychology, in a way life comes from above.
Yeah.
That there's some higher dimensional entity. For Swami Prabhupada, it's a jiva atma,
yeah,
individual spiritual spark. a jiva atma, and it abides within the lotus of the heart, which is the main teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the Bible of yogic Hindu teachings. The essential book is the science of the soul according to the Vedic teachings. And in there we find there's a jiva atma, and that's the living entity that is then embodied in the material body. So it's not the body producing the living entity, but rather the living entity inhabiting a body, which becomes a vehicle for the experience and action of that higher dimensional entity within the physical realm. So the idea is life comes from above, or as I would argue, instead of thinking in terms of above or below, it's most useful to think that it comes from within, without. That it's not that your higher self is above you, above your head somewhere. No, it's above us, meaning it's more interior into the higher dimensions of the human heart. That the heart isn't simply a physical organ in the material body, but there's a higher dimensional, there's a spiritual heart, a psychical heart, a spiritual heart, and then I would say ultimately a divine source emanation, or jiva atma, or a monad. Blavatsky calls the monads. So there is this kind of one entity, and these are in a way zero point elements, meaning that these elements, the divine source emanation, or a monad, or a jiva atma, are like a zero point entity, meaning it's an particle or entity so small that it's beyond the level of physical differentiation. It's beyond. See, in science, we can only measure something so far because of the uncertainty principle. And we get down to what are called zero-point levels, where we can't measure something any further. And so I would say that we have a life center that emerges from a point source, and then it emerges within, without. So it's interesting, in terms of Prigogine and modern ideas, they say how order emerges out of chaos, but they don't conceive that the living beings actually have life centers that emerge out of higher dimensions, which are the, and it's because of these life centers that order arises out of chaos, because there's this inner intelligence and dynamic. So order doesn't arise out of chaos just in an accidental, arbitrary way, but it arises out of chaos because there are life centers in living beings. And it's because of this underlying intelligence then that is embodied into the physical form.
Yeah, part of the problem is that, again, as I, you know, with something like dissipative structures, is that that's a description of something mathematically which occurs, and I'm sure it's accurate, and I'm sure that, you know, that it's real. But nobody considers the idea that somehow you're really not explaining the mechanism of how these higher things emerge. It's sort of like a little magic act. It's like Roger Sperry, the Nobel laureate, says that consciousness, higher order levels of consciousness emerge, but he doesn't really explain how that happens. Like, I'd say, yeah, that does happen, but again, it goes back to the idea that if you try to explain everything from the ground up, rather than understanding that there's another process where higher is informing lower, like higher in terms of more refined, more conscious, more intelligent, more unified, more integrated, then you have a very different understanding how this could happen. Like I would say, and I mean, I don't know this, I'm just kind of speculating myself, but like in dissipative structures, I think what happens on some level probably is that, you know, this order occurs when there's a perturbation of the system and you have a reorganization of the system. Well, I would say that probably on some level what's happening is that quantum shift occurs when there's some sort of, there's so much disorder in the system that there's somehow some sort of a resonance with this, with higher levels of consciousness or being, and that somehow these are informing, are allowed to inform and to create a shift to a higher level of complexity. I don't know, that's just very generic, but I think it's something like that probably occurs. You know, I mean, I wouldn't know if that's true or not, but as I say, if you just try to explain things in terms of one level and in terms of an evolutionary process, then I think you're really missing the complexity and the comprehensiveness of what's going on.
Yeah, and it's hard to... one of the concepts in this literature on trigger gene and dissipative structures and so on is what's called the concept of strange attractors. Because they have this concept, they argue it is as if there is some kind of center, which they call strange attractors, and that when order emerges out of chaos, there seems to be some strange attractor center which guides the arising of order out of chaos. See, and that's what I would say. I would say these zero-point centers are the strange attractors described in this literature.
Yeah.
They have the idea of strange attractors, but they don't speculate what they might be or what they could be. Whereas I argue, yeah, there is a strange attractor that is a zero-point center in the higher-dimensional physics of the heart. And the dynamics occurring within the quantum vacuum at these subquantum levels creates order surrounding that central point, the strange attractor. And then, in a way, if we imagine us at the heart of being, there being this empty space, and then surrounding that, it forms different bodies, body being a vehicle of matter and energy and intelligence that allows for the experience of that living entity on within a different plane of existence. So I actually argue that mystical teachings are very, very difficult to understand. Like, what they say is, in a way, so profound. For instance, one of the ideas I've long tried to understand is Blavatsky's comment that she says there is one divine omniscience, meaning all knowingness, which thrills throughout every finite point of the universe. Now, this suggests that we exist within this field of omniscience, because God is like ever-present, present everywhere, and is omniscient. So that suggests that space, what appears to be empty space, really there's this omniscience everywhere. We exist within this field of this infinite being. And somehow that infinite being concentrates itself, as it were, at a point, so that the influences of these higher dimensions are then able to bring life into a living being from arising from a point source. Somehow the universe concentrates itself into a point, as it were. That's a quote from The Secret Doctrine by Blavatsky about zero points. And she also says this quote I use a lot. She says, material points without extension are Leibniz's monads, and at the same time the materials out of which the gods and other invisible powers clothe themselves in bodies. The entire universe concentrating itself, as it were, in a single point. So these zero-point centers, the idea is that it's through zero-point dynamics that higher intelligences, spiritual and divine intelligences on higher planes of existence, their influences come down and emerge from a zero-point level within the human being, so that there's this underlying field of intelligence and spirit that underlies physical manifestations.
Yeah, and that position is entirely consistent with David Bohm's work, who's one of the physicists in the 20th century, one of the most esteemed physicists of the 20th century, who actually saw the need to go beyond both quantum theory and relativity theory. His specialty was in the hidden variables associated with both, and what, for completely different reasons, he says, each of them leads to the idea of a unity and a comprehensiveness beyond the material, and so he tried to explain that in terms of, in terms of an implicate order which underlies and which informs the explicate material order. And then he went beyond that in his later work and said there was another level of orders, and really the superimplicate order, and really that whole idea of how these different levels exist and inform lower levels and sort of, and interpenetrate them, so that really, you know, when we speak about them being higher or lower, it's not, as you said earlier, it's not up and down. It's more a description of the level of intelligence and the degree of integration and unity in these things, that they're not really higher or lower in terms of space, and in fact it really challenges the whole notion of space. I just want to...
Yeah, what space is.
Well,
yeah, because really,
yeah.
In a way, what we're dealing with is a holographic concept of space.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Somehow the whole exists at every little point.
Yeah.
So every point somehow embodies that whole and is interrelated to it.
Yeah, and in saying that, the beauty of this all this to me is that I don't pretend to understand these things. On, you know, as you say, it's very hard to grasp these things and to get your head around to thinking in these terms of these different categories. But it seems to me that the beauty of this type of a model is that a couple of things. One, it deals with the problem of non-locality in physics, which is really maybe the most important and difficult problem for modern physics. And at the same time, it allows for the experiences of cosmic and higher consciousness, where people describe themselves as being at one with the universe, and it provides an entirely consistent model which allows for such dynamics. When you have that holographic perspective, where you realize that our three-dimensional space is really it's illusory in terms of it's a projection of a higher level, and that somehow on some higher level everything is in everything else, which is extraordinary, and which is mainly there's a great quote from Gurdjieff in Search for the Miraculous, where he talks about how the experience of higher consciousness leads to the direct apprehension of this unity and the interrelatedness of everything, and that all of the esoteric teachings are really attempts to convey this idea of how diversity is really ultimately informed and can be resolved in terms of a unity. And the problem is that in our normal waking consciousness, we see everything in terms of separateness and in terms of relationships which are really projections of higher levels of order and unity, and as he says, the objective of esotericism is to allow one to experience this, but also it's to try to explain how this is possible. And I would say that now in modern physics we're getting more and more of an understanding from an intellectual approach, which provides a conceptual model of this, and that's the beauty of the mystical and esoteric tradition, is it provides an understanding of consciousness and of human being, which complements and really furthers this idea of a theory of everything. I mean, that's a funny thing in modern physics, when they talk about a theory of everything all the time, is that it's really a misnomer, because they're talking about a theory of everything and terms of a limited set of assumptions about the physical universe and in terms of basic equations, but that's not really a theory of everything.
Yeah, in modern physics it isn't. I mean, when they talk about a theory of everything, it's a theory that integrates the four known laws of physics.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't tie in at all to the issues of human consciousness or human self-existence. It really only has application in physics, and they don't, as Renee Weber says in her book, Dialogues with Scientists and Sages, she says a physicist wants to unify everything into one consistent theory, but he doesn't include him or herself in the equation.
Yeah.
They don't include their own consciousness and being existence into the equation. Whereas in the mystical teachings, we have to include the observer to understand the observed. We have to include the observer, the nature of what an observer is.
Yeah.
This
is the kind of material, by the way, that I didn't bring my writing up with me, Chris, because I was reworking my chapter on a general overview of mysticism. This is the book that I'm working on, The Problem of God's Contracting Universe, which is a description of Christopher's theoretical position and also how it relates to the questions of science and religion in this age, and how the esoteric mystical perspective provides a more comprehensive model to explain these the what I would say is the really the phony debate between science and religion. And after the introduction, I have a basic overview about mystical teachings, and what I'm citing is a consistent representation within the mystical literature of certain ideas about the idea of unity and about how people experience themselves directly as being one with creation. And these aren't metaphors. These are meant to be understood literally. And
We see that is like the quintessential meaning of what mysticism is.
Yeah.
Is that experience of unity with the environment, that the person isn't simply an isolated ego within time space, but somehow we can merge and experience our direct interrelatedness to deeper structures.
And really, that's what the whole mystical tradition is talking about the different methods. And the esoteric tradition, the mystical experience covers a wide variety of experiences, many of which occur spontaneously or as a result of taking drugs or to various shamanistic practices. And then there's an esoteric component to it, where there are schools which very directly work on not only trying to help people achieve these levels of integration and unity, but also to try to map the landscape and provide an understanding of how the normal waking state relates to these higher states. But really what the whole mystical tradition describes is this experience of unity. It's like a dissipative structure. You have a breakdown through the purification of the self and the psychological functioning. You have a breakdown of the normal waking conscious state, the breakdown of habits and the breakdown of automatic processes, the breakdown of the sense of I as being tied to the body and to the sensory realm, and you have a reintegration and realization of the higher self and the dissolution of the illusion of separateness and a direct apprehension and feeling of oneness with creation. And one of the things I think that really has prejudiced people in modern thinking against mysticism is that many people who have these experiences describe them as being ineffable, that they're inexplicable. And anybody who's ever done a psychedelic drug knows that you can have these extraordinary experiences, but it's very difficult to translate what you've experienced into your normal waking consciousness or into normal language, because you're experiencing things which really transcend our normal perceptual categories and our categories for conceiving of things. But at the same time, I think while that's true, and there are many, many spontaneous experiences which are really very difficult to at all describe or capture, and even people who work to develop these higher experiences have problems describing them. I think some modern thinkers have therefore decided that these ideas, these experiences have no relevance to psychology of the normal waking state. And I think that's a huge mistake, because that's where the esoteric tradition, I think, is really extremely important, because what the esoteric tradition provides is a very elegant and concise and extremely brilliant and lucid analysis of the normal waking state and its psychology and how our illusory sense of I is identified with our normal waking state and lower states of consciousness. And it provides a link with these higher states of consciousness and shows how what the methods are which can lead to the transcending of the normal waking state. So there's this possibility, this model of how these things relate.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like you say, scientists say that mystical experiences are ineffable, or mystics would say that.
Yes.
They can't be put into words. And in a way, that's true, but in another way, we're saying, however, in light of the new ideas emerging in science, these are not ineffable.
Yeah.
Like, still, there's an ineffable component to them. But in a way, we can understand how these higher states of consciousness might be possible. And in the new physics, there are ideas which support, that provide a possible basis for these experiences. So the experiences are not as ineffable as they used to be. And now is a time where I think science has advanced far enough that we can begin to understand the science of higher states of consciousness. I mean, that's what this show and the Zero Point work is about, trying to understand the science of higher consciousness.
And that's why I say that's what's so disappointing about this book by Capra, is that he was, you know, the author of the Tao of Physics, and he showed how the worldviews of the traditional Eastern religions were extremely compatible with many of the ideas in the worldviews which are emerging from modern physics. And yet, in Capra's book, it seems to me that he commits all the same errors which characterizes almost all of modern thinking in psychology and science about the nature of consciousness. And the most fundamental mistake is that people assert very forcefully that somehow consciousness emerges out of the neurological processes of the head brain. But again, and you know, I mention this almost every time I'm on this program, but this is not in any way grounded in fact. This is as Stanislav Grof says, it's the cardinal epistemological assumption of modern Western thought, and that's what it is. It's an epistemological assumption. It's an assumption about how we know. And I would say that when this is what consistently within your work, Chris, is this idea that the head produces consciousness is an assumption, and not only is it an assumption, but it's an incorrect assumption. We have to go beyond this, and we have to have some way of tying consciousness on the individual level to consciousness in the universe. And again, there's an assumption that somehow the universe is this dead thing out there in which we are just sort of these accidental life forms. And that's a mammoth assumption, and I would say an incorrect one. And that's what the beauty of the mystical and esoteric tradition is that it provides an understanding which links life and consciousness in human beings to life and consciousness in the universe.
It's certainly a whole alternative model of the structure of existence to consider such a view, because it's suggesting that there isn't just the four-dimensional space-time continuum, but instead there are a series of interpenetrating planes of existence which existing at different levels of materiality. So there's not only the physical world, but there's also underlying that and supporting that an astral world, a mental world, and then higher dimensional worlds. So that really everything we see physically, that we're only attuned to some space-time complex, but there's really this deeper, higher dimensional space. There's other levels of existence underlying this and supporting this. And it is suggesting that we can approach mystical teachings from a scientific perspective. You see, the problem with modern science and psychology for the past century is that everybody's dismissed the idea of human beings as having a spirit or soul. And we've accepted the dogma of materialism that we're only higher primates that happen by happenstance and good luck to come into existence, but there's nothing higher to a human being. We're only material biological organisms. There is no divine spark or soul within the human being. So we've had a century of education and science which has dismissed all these possibilities. And it's like, as you say, Jim, I love your quote in one of your books where you argue essentially that science hasn't dismissed these possibilities on the basis of scientific evidence or argument. Instead, it's been by fiat. It's been like a declaration that they dismissed the soul, and then they close their eyes to all those evidences that support the existence of other dimensions and out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, ESP, coincidental concurrence of events, which embody the same intelligence. They dismiss all these enigmas in every department of science in order to maintain their blind biological evolutionary theory. But really, this has been a dogma which has never been proven and really is highly pseudoscientific in many essential aspects.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that I mean, you know, I think that the quote goes something like, science did not disprove the existence of spirit, soul, mysticism, animism. I have a whole list of things.
It banished them.
And by fiat and caveat and authoritative denial, basically. But really, if you get into the history of how that happened, too, and that's one of the things I'm touching on in my book, it's even more extraordinary because not only did this happen as a result of certain ideological choices, but it actually happened as a result of some very profound and intriguing sociological and political forces too. And ironically, in some senses, it was a deal between science and the Catholic Church, which helped promote this idea that. That over here we have spirit and soul, and over here we have material science, and never the twain shall meet. And that in a way was a way to, it was a way for science to stake its claim to its own domain, and at the same time enter into a pact with the devil, in a sense, with the church to banish all mystical and esoteric viewpoints. And it's actually a fascinating historical perspective.
It's interesting, I got to go here because
I got to get into town. But I think maybe in the next show, Jill, we're just getting warmed up, unfortunately, but maybe in the next show or two, we could go into Capra a little bit. And if you have a chance to look at that Bernard Haish book, I think you'd be interested in talking a little bit about that and how it relates to your work, because I think it's right up your alley in terms of, I think he has a similar perspective, but you've got it much more developed in terms of...
His book's called The God Theory, I understand.
He's a physicist, and it's a very interesting book. As I say, he's a former editor of the Journal of Astrophysics, he's certainly got his bona fides as a legitimate physicist, but he really points to a lot of the same failings he sees in the perspective of modern physics and trying to explain things, and he presents a holographic model of the universe. But as I say, I think your work goes beyond his in many ways, and he speaks of the importance of light and I think it's quite intrigued. You know?
I would anticipate the one thing he lacks is the idea that a human being might have a zero-point center.
He doesn't have that, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think that's what's really unique in the kind of perspective I'm arguing and trying to present.
And also the heart doctrine, I think, in terms of modern thinkers. I'm stunned that it's so prevalent in the esoteric tradition, in the mystical tradition, and yet nobody seems to incorporate it and take it seriously. Like, they're not speaking metaphorically here, boys. They mean it. You know, like, when people say that they look within their heart and they talk about being pure of heart and they talk about knowing things in their heart, this isn't bad poetry. It's supposed to be thought of as a literal truth. Anyway, thanks a lot. I'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Yeah, thank you,
thanks,
Jim.
Chris. Okay, bye.
Okay, goodbye. Okay, so just try to summarize a little bit what Jim and I've been talking about is trying to argue how we need to have a science that considers human beings as multidimensional beings, that we have higher dimensional existence, that our life in the material body is impermanent, and yet we continue as conscious entities beyond Gates' death's door, that we exist, we will exist in other subtle dimensions of existence beyond death, and we can learn even while we're alive to manifest and experience through these higher dimensions. Okay, so I'll return again to discussing the zero-point concept in future shows and elaborate further upon it. We can never get... It's such a subtle and complex subject. It really does take time to consider. Okay, so we'll move on to the second half of the show, And I asked Don at BBS Radio if you could get my guest on the line. I don't know. And if Mark is there, and I'll wait a moment. And Mark, I invite you, when you hear this, just come in on the line and let me know you're here. Mark is a member or organizer of the Ottawa 9/11 Truth Group, and they actively go out once a month onto Parliament Hill in Ottawa and give out DVDs and try to wake people up to the cover-up of the 9/11 events. Okay, so I don't know if Mark's available. I guess I'll talk along till.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify one thing.
Yeah.
We actually go to more places than just Parliament. Over the last, since April of 2007, we've gone out on the 11th of every month as part of the 11th of every month campaign, which is going on truthaction.org. We've actually gone to CBC Radio on Spark Street, A Channel in the Market, Rideau Center, the War Memorial. We've been downtown. We always keep it downtown. But yeah, we're taking part in this campaign that's been going on since February of 2007. So Ottawa jumped on right within 3 months. So
February 2007, and there are 9/11 truth groups across Canada, aren't there?
And the world, yes.
Yeah, what are some of the cities in Canada? There's one in Montreal. I understand they had David Ray Griffin down 2 weeks ago.
Yes, and actually the Montreal group is organizing the March on Ottawa, which is coming in September 11th in Ottawa at Parliament Hill. That's the other reason why we're at Parliament, is to raise awareness.
Yeah.
The Montreal group has organized that, and across Canada alone, we've got Calgary, Vancouver, Fraser Valley, Kootenay, Sarnia, Ontario, Red Deer, Alberta. I'm just naming off a few. There's Edmonton. There's the Newfoundland has just started up. Newfoundland Labrador has a whole group is starting. It also sprung up in Australia. There's four spots in Australia: Sydney, Melbourne. There's two other locations in Australia, and so it's all part of the same movement. And the idea is that for anything to change, it's going to require mass protests, and we're not really looking at the old model protest. We're looking at more civil informationing, so that's why we were giving out DVDs with movies. Like the DVD we handed out yesterday had five movies on it relating to the issue of 9/11 truth.
Wow.
What we've been doing lately for say the last 6 months has been 300 movies a month.
Wow, excellent. Good for you.
Yeah, and I mean, there's always, like, we've got the guys from Smith Falls. They showed up the last 2 months, and they brought their own discs. So we actually gave out 500 last month, and this month I think it was 400. So
wow, excellent. Excellent. Boy, it's maybe you can tell us, Mark, is there any way on the Internet where people can go to try to connect with your group, and like a website or Facebook? Or
definitely, yeah. The first place I would say, if you're trying to get just to the Ottawa group, it's www.ottawa911truth.com, and of course the 911 are numeric. If you want to join internationally, go to www.truthaction.org. and join the forums there. That's all I did. And back in April of 2007, there was no truth movement in Ottawa. This campaign came out, and there was nothing going on, so I went to that forum and I posted, Ottawa, Ontario, I will be on CBC Radio on Spark Street at this time. Join me if you want. And that's all I kept doing. Every month that went by, I made sure I was out there. I was just very consistent, and I'd always take photographs and post them after the event. And our event that we did yesterday is already posted on the Ottawa 9/11 Truth Forum, because we get all the pictures. We have video coming. We had a guy who was filming. He got 2 hours of video footage, and he's going to make another YouTube clip.
Excellent, excellent.
I think you mentioned that you saw a couple of our YouTube clips.
Yeah, I've seen your previous month's outing.
At the June one at Parliament, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it's the same guy that's putting this one together. It's going to be much longer. That was actually a short clip.
Yeah.
And you don't get a full scope of what the events are about. Basically, what we're doing is we just gather. We're very peaceful, very polite. We just answer questions, hand out discs. And yesterday, we actually had so many people. We had almost 30 people that came out. So at one point there, we split, and we marched down to the Blues Fest, the Ottawa Blues Fest. And we went there. We set up there for about an hour and a half. So, and then
You? Excellent.
Yeah, it was.
What was the response? Do many people coming along? Like, are they aware of it? Many people.
We had many people come up and say they knew who we were, and they thanked us for being out there. They took our information. We didn't have as many discs as we had about maybe. We brought 300, and by the time we got to Blues Fest, we probably had about 100 left. So. We didn't have very much for the people going into Blues Fest, but we still had those big banners, and we got some negative comments, of course, but it was more insults. It was just people calling us names. And
That's very interesting. I really wonder. It would be so interesting to really have the time and opportunity to go in with those people into what is underlying what their insults and their kind of denial of it. Like, it would be very interesting.
Well, it was only a couple people. Out of all we had, it was a very positive response we received overall. But the couple negative, they just sound very uninformed and go away. It didn't really have any substance to it.
Yeah, they never have any truths. Like, they never have knowledge of what happened. Whereas you talk to 9/11 truthers, and they all know the details, you know, they know about Building 7, they know about how the buildings fell, you know, almost at free fall speed. Like, they're knowledgeable, like, they're intelligent.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who, you're whatever, traitors or lunatics or something, they never know anything. It's like they are
neither.
So stuck in that state of denial that they can't kind of, they're like the sheep people, the sheeple. Which is a word that's come out. I think it's very useful because you see how the masses of human beings now, in a way, are sheep people. They've been so brainwashed and conditioned and deceived intentionally through the media and by their own government. They're complete sheep people.
It's what they talk about after, like, the next day. You can almost predict what they're going to be talking about the next day based on what television is pumping out. And it's pretty sad, but... but I think things have really changed here. We've actually, Ottawa is, like I said, just a small part of the whole 11th of every month campaign. And we've really become one of the prominent members or representing just based off of how since November of 2007 we had, October of 2007 we had maybe 4 people, November we had 12, and now we've got 30.
Wow.
It just keeps getting bigger, and the talent that is coming to these events. We've got a guy who's doing those videos. He's you might as well call him a full-fledged professional producer because they're amazing videos.
They're excellent,
Another guy does three-dimensional graphics, and he made a couple of introduction videos for our discs.
Oh, yeah.
They're phenomenal, you know. So, and then just other people coming out just with the signs. Like, I mean, people come out with some pretty creative signs that are just beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
And so, it's really positive. We've had a good response. We've never had any trouble from the police. Ottawa is a great place for that. People can express their political opinions without fear.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that. That's beautiful. And so far, we are raising awareness for that march because the Montreal group is, there are people driving in a bus from BC and they're picking up people all along the way. There's other people just coming in from the state everywhere. Starting in Montreal on September 7th, and they're actually going to physically march from Montreal to Ottawa.
Wow,
yeah,
really?
And the reason they're doing this is they're coinciding with a petition which has been submitted, and it's going to be submitted 45 days before the September 11th. So they
a petition to who? The House of Parliament?
Correct, yeah. And they have up to 45 days to respond. So the idea is that the people will show up on the 45th day, which happens to be September 11th. I thought that was genius. So,
excellent. What clever timing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's September 11th. So that's 7th to 11th for the Montreal group. On the 11th is when everybody's going to be here. And it's not done by the Ottawa group. Like, there are some members now, of course, helping out. But it was originally started from the Montreal group. And we've got bands lined up. We're trying to get a stand-up comedian to come out just to warm up the crowd. We have Nathan Moulton from Calgary 9/11 Truth is coming down. I'm not sure if you're familiar with his videos.
No, I'm not.
He's the guy who was in Walmart getting on the intercom talking about 9/11 Truth, and he's.
I heard that on the Alex Jones.
Yeah.
Truth Rising.
Correct. Yes, he was also in Truth Rising.
He comes over to Walmart and he says, "This is a message for your information. 911 was an inside job."
Yeah, right over.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And he's got several videos. Another one is where he dressed up as Santa Claus and he was handing out copies of Loose Change Final Cut and just the people in the street, and everybody took it because it was Santa.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, so it's fantastic. So he's actually traveling down from Calgary to attend this march on Ottawa.
On September 11th of this year, and that march from Montreal to Ottawa. Wow, the media will have to hide away for sure.
Go ahead.
Well, the media will have to find some entertainment to promote. You know, someone will show their underwear or not have underwear on, or someone will get divorced or something to fill their tabloid papers with.
Yeah. Well, we've tried for a year now, or over a year, to get the media's attention. At first, it was just CBC Radio. But in the winter, we were outside of CTV's A channel in the market, and they did ignore us. They didn't want to cover us. We did get our information to them and tried to get them to come out, but I don't know.
Well, they're in a very difficult spot, you know, because they know, the mainstream media knows that they're complicit in the cover-up of mass murder.
Yeah,
like, they're actually complicit in this. They all need to be read their Nuremberg decisions for their complicity in the cover-up of this.
It definitely, and it's falling apart, too, because people aren't going to the media to get their news anymore.
No.
They're going to the Internet, and back in, say, 2000, if you would have said, well, I get my news from the Internet, you know, you would have been laughed at because the Internet didn't really have any credibility.
Yeah.
But then if you look at which one out of the mainstream media or the blogs, which one was saying that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction? You know, it was the mainstream media. Which one were telling you that they were lying and that they didn't have weapons of mass destruction? It was the blogs.
Yeah.
So they really lost their credibility on that. And on the issue of 9/11 Truth, they are definitely losing their credibility everywhere.
Yeah, and you see how more and more desperate almost they are to deny it. And now they're beginning to try to say that conspiracy theorists are kind of like homegrown terrorists or something like that.
Yeah, they're trying to equate us with terrorism. They're trying to equate us with, not locally, but on a whole, they're trying to equate us with all sorts. They tried in 2003, 2004, they were trying to equate 9/11 Truth with Holocaust denial as a way to shut people
up. Oh, yeah, they love that. They like that a lot. That's funny.
Yeah, but they did try just to end all discussion, you know, like stop, and it was very lame.
It's so funny. You know, one reason why it's funny is because it's like the Jews have said about the Holocaust, like we should never forget, you know, and I totally agree with that. We should never forget these people who are murdered in genocides. But let's wake up, like, excuse me, I think you've forgotten. You're saying that we should never forget that genocide shouldn't be done to a people? Then why are you participating in genocide now in other countries?
It's a very intricate...
It's so hypocritical. It's like they've forgotten. How quick they forget. And they say, oh, never forget. No, we shouldn't forget.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, too, because it also blurs any, you know, any issue, But I'm glad that the issue of, like, trying to merge the two never stuck. And it never did, because there was no basis to it, equating 9/11 Truth with Holocaust denial.
No, but I see why the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, I mean, is another Rockefeller-controlled, you know, entity that's tried to, you know, bring about, like, restrict, you know, freedom of speech and you know, really have a maleficent influence on the population. I mean, this has been a really destructive group. And they always put it in, if you object to anything they would do, you're anti-Semitic, you know. It's terrible. And they deceive their own people. You know, they deceive the Jewish community just like they deceive, you know, non-Jewish people. We've all been deceived.
Yeah,
Jews don't understand what happened.
any
you
more
see that
than
respect
in the media too. They take one side and they only run with that. So, but
yeah.
But yeah, it's I really think that things are like there is a new awakening happening. The level, like when we started, nobody knew who we were. Now people do know, like, and that's and I mean overall, like the terms inside job have come across now, you know.
Yeah. Other terms too, like false flag terrorism.
Yep.
And state sponsored terrorism, like people are beginning to realize, oh, these things that we're told were done by terrorists were really done by these shadow elements in our own countries.
And the part I like the best is that the Security and Prosperity Partnership has been totally exposed. They tried denying that for years, and now everything they do, it's up on the net. People are talking about it.
Well, yeah, it is, but I mean, it's not totally exposed because
no.
The masses of people have no idea how their government's committing treason and
no,
how their
the
government
has been
is,
to talk
is,
about it,
is sold out to the corporate elites. Like, people don't grasp it. They're mentally not capable of grasping it.
Yeah,
and it is hidden by the media, the FPP. Do they put it in the media how all the fellows are gathering this weekend for 2 weeks at Bohemian Grove? Do they put in the media what Canadians are going to the media to Bohemian Grove for their summer festivals? You know?
They never do. They never
report it.
The Bilderberg meeting. Which Canadian politicians were at the Bilderberg meeting. The list came out. I've seen it. It was on Infowars.com.
Yeah.
But there was no mention in the Canadian media which politicians were there, and that's shocking. Well, that's not shocking, but you know what I mean.
Well, it's not shocking at all. It's perfectly consistent because the people who go to these meetings are the people who own the media, and the media is the propaganda method for these elites. So they own the media, so they hide the truth through the media. Media all becomes complicit. People don't mean to, but they end up being compromised, and they can't get out of it. No one can speak up.
And one of the things that people don't understand is that they say, well, you'd have to have everybody involved. There's no way you could keep stuff like this quiet. You don't have to have everybody involved. All you have to have is the editor involved, the one who makes the decision finally. That gets put in or that doesn't. And
yeah, there's no kind of independent investigative journalism anymore. No, it's you know, they have the news services, and those chains all get the same news service news items to go in their propaganda rag,
and they just go with it. Now, the other funny part when you talk about that is if you look at Luke Radowski from We Are Change,
mm-hmm.
You must be familiar with what he's doing with his We Are Change site. He really shouldn't be famous for what he's doing, because all he's doing is going after, you know, asking the hard questions. Isn't that what reporters were supposed to do? You know, like when we read the comic books as kids, it was always that diehard reporter that's getting right in there and, you know, shaking up the establishment. Well, you're not seeing that anymore.
No, you're not. The media have completely sold out. Like, the media no longer try to inform people. The media play a role in brainwashing people to believe all these lies. I mean, that's the role of the media now.
Or
I mean, the media have, they forgot human values, Christian values, religious values. They forgot the Bill of Rights and freedoms in Canada. They don't believe in all of this. What they believe in is corporate greed, and they get paid well. And they can't speak out, and they all become complicit in it. So the
media,
they're
not dependent on the people's money. They get their money elsewhere. So,
yeah, from the corporations who put all the ads on the media.
Now,
you know, they want to sell vaccinations to everybody. So they put on all these, you know, ads about got to get your Gardasil vaccinations. You know, did you know they want men to get Gardasil vaccinations now?
Yeah, two women just died. That was in the paper. Two women just died right after receiving the shots. So,
in Canada?
I don't think it was Canada. No.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just in Associated Free Press, I think I saw it. So,
you know,
and that's just one small element of what they're not talking about.
we live in such an absolutely astonishing time. You know, like, the 9/11 event is the most astonishing event that ever occurred within centuries. It is like the defining event of our age.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like biggest neocon by the neocons that ever perpetrated on the human race.
And they actually use their media intentionally to try to deceive the whole of humankind throughout the planet through their control of the media and their denial of it and their infiltration of all the intelligence and police services.
Would you say that they overstepped things with 9/11?
Absolutely.
This is the
event. No event shows the criminality of our governments to the extent that 9/11 does. Like, it enables people to grasp it because you begin to wake up and you realize, holy smokes, how could I ever have believed that Osama bin Laden and his reindeers brought down those two towers in that way? Like, this is the most ridiculous story. It's like watching The Simpsons. The more you learn about it, it's completely concocted.
But at the same time, if you walk into the mall and you talk to five people, maybe one of them knows about it. That's the other scary part. And, like, you're talking to them and they've never even heard it.
No, people don't know because all they know is that they trust. See, everybody thought you could trust the government. I mean, I trusted the government.
I believe generally
they're well-hearted people, even if some of them become corrupted a bit, kind of, where we can understand that. But this is something wholly different. This is an organized criminal activity to hide the perpetrator. Why doesn't the government inform people as to 9/11 was an inside job? Because the same people who did 9/11 control the government. That's the whole point.
It's gone to another level.
So they
sure.
They become complicit, but they don't know when the thing happened. Like, they didn't know that. Like, you know, it's such a web. You know, maybe only a few people realize what was being done, you know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are caught unwillingly in an awful situation themselves. That's why they can't speak the truth. Everybody has to live a lie. You have a whole nation living a lie.
Or asleep, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we think we're sending troops to Afghanistan to defend democracy and protect the people and bring humane conditions. But really, that's not why we're in Afghanistan. We went to Afghanistan because the neocons and these people who want the New World Order, they wanted military bases there and to look after the drug trade and the oil.
Yeah,
so the whole thing has been a criminal enterprise.
Yeah, it's what I'm finding is that the more you read, the deeper it goes, and the more you realize that this has been going on for a very long time.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people don't grasp, is that it's generational. You know, they will start something, and then their grandchildren will finish it.
Yeah.
And that's not how most people think. They think about next week. They think about next paycheck, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's such a systemic problem. Like, the whole system has been corrupted.
A line I like to mention is, I saw Mike Rivero said it from What Really Happened.
Mm-hmm.
The same people, when you look at how people get elected, the ones who get elected are the ones who are the most ruthless, the most cutthroat, the heartless. They're the ones who succeed in our electoral process. So then why is it surprising when those same people turn around and they're completely heartless and ruthless?
Yeah.
I always thought that was a great quote.
Yeah, well, we live in an astonishing time. Because in a way, it's like you have a fabric of cloth, and then one bit, you have a tear in it, and then that tear propagates through the whole fabric. And in a way, 9/11 event was that tear. They overdid themselves because the criminal evidence is now clear that it wasn't, we'd been intentionally deceived about what happened.
And they also underestimated the power of social networking and YouTube and all just the internet in general, the communication. The children nowadays are much more in tune with what's going on than they're not depending on the television, you know?
Oh, yeah. You think so, eh? I'm older. You know, it's so funny because, I mean, I'm almost 60, eh? And, like, I had no idea of any of this until my son, my youngest son, 2 years ago, got me to watch a movie, Loose Change. I had absolutely no idea. I watched that movie and was absolutely astonished. I couldn't have imagined it has having been a fraud like that.
Yeah,
and for many people, then you realize that, and then you begin to wake up to what does that mean? Because it's not just that event, but how is this complete lie been perpetrated? And everybody talks, like, goes on. These people all know, and in the RCMP and intelligence community and the military, they know.
Yeah.
And everybody maintains the
fraud.
But
they still serve, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's very strange. It's,
yeah.
It's
like there's a collective delusional system that people have been conditioned and brainwashed into. It's astonishing.
Now, what I will say is that because of the level of awareness that's been raised on the issue of 9/11 and on false flag terrorism, I don't think that they'll be able to get away with another one. Like when the London bombing happened, it fell apart very quickly and was exposed. The 7/7 London bombing?
Yeah, but whatever happened, no one's held responsible.
You're correct, yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
It.
They just cover up the fact that it's been exposed. You know, it's not on the main media.
No, not at all.
You know,
and
it's not only those events. I mean, now it's definitely been proven that assassination of Kennedy, three Kennedys were all done by these same people. Martin Luther King and Lenin and all these devious things that we've been misled about. The Oklahoma City bombing, the high school shootings, all these things.
Yep, they're calling this war on terror the most censored war ever, is what they're calling. And then when you start looking into the new weapons that they're coming out with, these sound weapons, these microwave guns, who knows what they're doing, you know? And when they're sinking billions and billions of dollars into researching these things, you know, of course they're going to find stuff.
They have such a arsenal of weapons, these people. I mean, it's just incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why, like, it's interesting. We need a revolution, or I would call it an evolution, in our society. We need people to kind of wake up. And,
yes.
And because we need the people in our own police, in our own intelligence community, in our own government, we need these people to turn around. Like, we can't go out and fight them, with sticks and stones,
no.
And they got all these kinds of weapons. Like, we need them to turn around, to wake up and to realize, no, you know, to say no. No,
yeah,
we need to stop this. We're destroying the environment. They're being poisoned by the chemtrails. They're taking the shots in the services. These people, they poison their own military with all their inoculations and shots.
Yeah, and
it's terrible what they do.
A good movie for that was called Beyond Treason. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, that was exposed the whole intricate. They have the connection between the military and the pharmaceutical company. It was terrifying.
Yeah, no, it's all. This is all tied into all the pharmaceutical poisons that we've been intentionally given, and they're not put out. They're not made available based on adequate scientific investigations of them. And then, if they are investigating them, they're doing it illegally, subjecting people to unknown risks.
Yeah, and it'll take 50 years before they admit it.
Yeah, and now they're trying to prevent people from having health products, which are far more valuable for people to have. And instead, they're introducing more. See, in all these inoculations, there's poisonous substances. There's mercury. There's formaldehyde. There's other toxins, cancerous-causing agents, genetically modified materials. Now they're into nanoparticle stuff. These can all be put in inoculations. They experiment on the soldiers or maybe on the police or, you know, these are terrible things.
And they can also put that stuff in the food.
Yeah.
You know?
And now they're going to make it so you can't even sue corporations for anything.
Yeah, they've done that with thimerosal. They passed it, I think it was in when the Patriot Act was renewed, they had a clause in there that stated you couldn't sue the makers of thimerosal for autism, even if the link was proven or something. They actually had it right in there. It was a rider clause.
They make the laws to protect their own criminal activities.
Yeah, which was pretty much an admission of guilt, you know.
See, our government has so betrayed Canadian citizens. It's so betrayed them to the corporate elites. Like, that's what's happened, is the corporate elites now control the government, and the government, they're puppets, they come and go, and, you know, and many of them don't themselves understand what's happening.
The elected seats aren't where the power is. It's the people who are appointed later. It seems to be how the game is played. And some of them get appointed for lifelong positions, so...
Well, I mean, you see how all our prime ministers, they all become Bilderbergers before they become the prime ministers.
Stephen Harper did, that was correct. He was in...
Yeah, and Chrétien was,
yeah,
and Martin was, and Trudeau, and, you know, all these people, they hang out together.
Yeah, and what can you do? But they are being exposed. I just hope that the exposure... I think what happens to happen now is people have to, like, in the Commonwealth states anyways, like... The BBC, the CBC, the ABC in Australia, we all basically have to start lobbying to reduce their funding because they're not telling us the truth or what we want to know. And I think that to me sounded like a very reasonable thing, because we can't control CBS, we can't control CTV, we have no control over them because they're bought and paid for by corporate interests, but we do have control over the ones that, like the CBC in Canada, so... I think
it's so odd, you know, because see, really, it's like, hey, we've got evidence here to help solve a mass murder. You know, there were 20 Canadians murdered that day and 3,000 people, and then, you know, 7,000 to 10,000, I think, died from the cleanup. You know, workers have died. All these murdered people, and there's all this overwhelming evidence for it, and the police do nothing. So it's not like the police anymore try to capture the criminals. They don't. You can't take this information to the police. The police should be doing this, not you or me.
You're correct, yeah. I mean,
this is ridiculous, really.
And that's the reason why I'm doing something, is because nobody else was. In Ottawa, anyways, in February 2007, there was nothing. Now we've got a huge truth movement with several different areas and tentacles, and it's fantastic. Now, I mean, if I could put in one more thing, an announcement, I just found out yesterday that David Ray Griffin will actually be coming to Ottawa on August 21st. He's going to be at Ottawa's main library, the 120 Metcalf, and it's $15 at the door. And I have the Gmail address that, if I could read it.
Yeah, please, do.
Okay, sure.
Do.
All you have to do, there's 200 seats available. If you reserve your ticket, you still have to pay at the door, but you'll have your spot reserved. The email address is ovcapa@gmail.com. It's ovcapa. And that's the Canadian Action Party Electoral District of Ottawa has been formed. They've only recently been built. That was through an effort we were actually... A lot of the truthers here were a part of, because we're also Canadian Action Party members.
Yeah.
So David Ray Griffin will be coming to Ottawa, thanks to them. And I think that's fantastic. I only found out about it yesterday.
Yeah.
And I will be there. I'm very looking forward to meeting him, because he's, you know, he's been an idol of mine for many years now.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'm going to be there. I'll be there that night. That's going to be amazing. I've heard him speak on other shows and on the radio and such. I mean, he's a remarkable speaker, and he has so many enigmas. Like, I mean, I like how he described the 9/11 Commission report as the 586-page lie.
Yeah, no, his the myth versus the reality is one of his talks.
Yeah.
That was very, I thought that was great, because he covered all the there would take too many people. Well, actually, it would take this. Oh, well, you couldn't keep a secret. Well, actually, they haven't. You know, like, it was very well done the way he presented it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm looking forward. I really wanted to get that across.
And he was, thank you. And I'll try to repeat it from every week on our show here.
Great.
He just was in Montreal 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he filled, they sold out, I gather.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So several hundred people came out.
I think they had a bigger auditorium, too, than what we have here in Ottawa.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he always sells out. And And I never thought he'd be coming to Ottawa because, you know, who would put it together? And look, it just happened. So.
Yeah, CAP, the Canadian Action Party, we're so lucky in Canada that we've actually got the beginning of a real political party that is grassroots-based and wants to bring about truth and justice in our society.
And they also support an independent investigation of 9/11.
Yes, they do.
They're the only group that's supporting that, so that's
fantastic. Yes, they do, yeah.
Yeah, so...
But, I mean, I hope people in other parties will begin to turn around. Was there one MP who introduced the petition to the House of Commons? Like, was it a BC MP?
Yeah, that was NDP Libby Davies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the NDP. Then there was, what's his name, John Ogilvie from the Green Party. He's also been locally... He's been coming out to a lot of the SPP rallies. He hasn't embraced 9/11 truth, but he is coming out to the SPP rallies.
Yeah.
And raising awareness, which is excellent, because that's Green Party and NDP that we're seeing. Not much of NDP. Peter Julian's doing a lot towards the SPP, and I commend him for that. I would like to see it a lot faster and a lot more politicians getting involved, because it can't happen behind closed doors, especially with the internet now. It won't be able to happen behind closed doors anymore. So.
I mean, these people need to be exposed and confronted more and more. And
there is a We Are Change Ottawa now.
Sorry?
There is a We Are Change Ottawa chapter that has just started.
Oh, do you have their website?
Yeah, wearechangeottawa.org is the website. And they've talked to Paul Dewar. They're just starting out. They've had a few meetings, but yeah, and also there's parliaments in recess right now, so there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
So actually, it gives them a good time to get set up, coordinated, and how they're going to do it. And they're taking, they're doing it the same way according to the charter of We Are Change, which is peaceful, non-violent. Just ask the questions and get those answers. And the thing is, there's like 30,000 people a day that go to wearechange.org.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's really phenomenal, and I love the concept. It's just they're doing what reporters are supposed to do. So,
yeah.
So, or traditionally, anyways, at least what I thought reporters were supposed to do. So,
well, they were. I mean, that's what's so sad. Like I've lived in Ottawa much of my life, and to think the Ottawa Citizen, I read it now, and I just see it's a hateful newspaper. They're actually they're telling all these lies,
yeah,
justifying and hiding all these things, and amusing people and misleading them and having, you know, the editorials lately in there, like why Israel needs to bomb Iran, like. Israel doesn't need to mass murder a million people. It's so insane what's happening. And it's all, you know, it's all prepared in the media.
Yeah,
they're actually taking part ahead of time.
I've seen articles come out on the internet. Something happens. I've seen the spin applied to it within a day or two. And then I picked up the Ottawa Citizen and actually read the article with the spin applied, you know? So,
yeah.
So 2 days later or 3 days later, it's not even a current. So, and I'm not the biggest news buff in the world. I'm just one guy. But if you look on the internet, on the blogs, you will find the real information. And,
yeah, it's definitely available on the internet. I mean, there was an astonishing series of movies that have come out, like Loose Change, both editions.
Truth Rising, which just came out, which is Alex Jones's newest one. It's excellent, and that really covers the We Are Change group.
And Endgame, which kind of gives you the whole structure of how eugenics programs, how the kind of population reduction and who these people actually are.
Over the last 200 years. And
Yeah, so, well, Mark and I have been having kind of broad discussion. We were just saying about some of these excellent new documentary movies that are available through the Internet. And we urge people, like, go on the Internet, start learning. You know, watch The Empire of the City is an astonishing two-part, five-hour documentary that really gives you a whole alternative view of our history of Western countries and the wars and such. People need to be wake up to how much we've been deceived through our education and our understanding of history. All these things, we've been fed propaganda and been intentionally deceived. So I do encourage people to get on the Internet, and that's really, and let's start demanding of the media that they start being more honest and you know, fulfill some of their civic responsibility. Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hi, yes,
I tried
back.
To pick up, yeah, we got cut off. I tried to pick up and just get back to the idea of watching some of these movies and so on, and how the truth is out there. Not in the main media, but in the, on the Internet, at least for a while.
Yeah, and it's more and more, it's like trying to stick your finger in a dam with all the leaks that are coming through.
Yeah.
And there's so many different areas to cover, too. Like you mentioned chemtrails. That's just another area you could go off into and explore, and that's being exposed as well. So,
Every one of these, like, they're huge. It's like, you know, the chemtrails, like, imagine that these people are actually flying over us all the time. My kids, they're spraying us. Aluminum, barium, cancerous agents, they're spraying us all the time. It's unbelievable.
People can't,
and the public is like the sheeple. They go along, they're being sprayed, they don't even know it.
They don't look up.
No, they don't look up in the air, and the media never report it. They know. You know, it's astonishing. And
yes,
who
that's
are
a very,
these people?
Very interesting topic for sure. Like that one goes off into a whole other areas.
Like you have to
program.
Wonder what is psychiatrically wrong with these people. Like that's how I see. I'm a forensic psychologist.
Okay.
I worked in the prison system for 12 years, as well as being studied in mystical, spiritual, occult teachings. I'm a forensic and clinical psychologist, and we gotta ask like. Holy smokes, what's the psychology of these people? It's an astonishing thing what's happened in our society. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and but the good news is that people are aware of what's going on now, or at least starting to, you know. I think a reflection of that is the drop in newspaper sales are plummeting. Nobody's going to the news media anymore for their news, which is another one. They've lost credibility, too. If you start looking at the approval ratings of the Congress in the States, of the, you know, it's very low. It's at all-time lows.
Yeah,
so,
it dropped under 10%. I think it was
9%
it went
approval
to.
Rating or something.
Yeah.
2 days ago. And,
yeah. I heard also that Dennis Kucinich, who took 4 hours to read his 36 or 26 articles of impeachment before the Senate or the Congress, I'm not sure which, but he's now reduced it to one main item to make it easier for these people. And Nancy Pelosi, I heard, is beginning to consider that maybe the one might be carried forward.
She's beginning to consider, but she's stonewalled for so long. She stated 2 days before the 2006 election, impeachment was off the table.
Yeah.
And now she's got another election coming up, and suddenly she's starting to talk about it.
Yeah, you know who's running against her in her own district
Cindy
Sheehan
is running
against her,
yeah.
I mean, I feel so sorry for these people because they themselves have become so complicit in the cover-up of these things that they weren't part of originally themselves, like he didn't know about.
Yeah.
But they end up having to kind of cover it up, and it's like what people say, there's an elephant in the room, and no one will comment on it, you know?
Yeah, and it's getting more and more obvious, too. So I'm really hoping something big happens. If I could state one thing I'd like to impart would be people can make the change. They don't have to, you can't do it sitting on your couch watching, you know, a reality show. You have to get informed, you have to get involved, and and that it doesn't take much. Like as for the 9/11 truth that we're doing here in Ottawa, it started with myself and one other guy for 8 months, you know, before we had anybody join us. And it didn't take much. All you have to do is hold a sign that says whatever, stand for 2 hours, and go home. Take a couple pictures, make sure they're up on the net so that other people know you're doing it. And if you just keep doing it every month, that like, well, that's what we've chosen to do is a monthly vigil. It's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, and we're just doing one issue, which we believe is, like, I personally believe 9/11 truth is the key to ending the war. Once you start figuring out that that was a hoax, you start figuring out that the war on terror is a hoax, everything falls into it, it falls apart. So, so that's why I focused on that one personally. But you could take any issue, and just if you do it, people will see, people will notice, and you will change the public opinion. And that's what's important. So,
hello?
Hi.
We may have someone joining us here. With someone on the line? Karen? Okay, sorry. I absolutely agree that the 9/11 event is the most significant event. Like, I mean, that's your 9/11 truth, and I think that is the catch in the material that can most lead to the whole undoing of the whole fabric of what's been done. I mean, I hope so.
Yeah.
No, well, it's the smoking gun, they call it, you know, like here, like there's so obvious criminal data. You could prove it in any court in the world before any impartial, sane judge, if there are any. You could prove it to a jury anywhere in the world of all these criminal activities being done by our governments and these people.
Well, we can hope. And we're going to keep going. We've got the march coming up in September, which we're hoping is huge. And so that's just going to, it's going to be a peak for the Ottawa presence, really, because we'll have everybody coming. But then October 11th, we're going to be out. We're going to have a new location. We do 3 months at one location, and then we'll have a meeting, and then we go 3 months at another location after we've decided.
So where are you then, August 11th?
August 11th, 6 p.m., we will be at the Eternal Flame on Parliament Hill.
At the Eternal Flame.
The following month is the big march on Ottawa, and so we'll be at Parliament Hill again. But yeah, August 11th, 6 o'clock at night, we'll be bringing 300 burned discs. The guys from Smith Falls have said they're going to try to match us or bring, they're going to burn their own copies. And so we're just going to give out all those discs. And we always stay at one location for the first hour to let people trickle in. After that, yesterday we marched down to Blues Fest just because. So who knows what will happen, but it's always good. It's always positive. And it's a beautiful thing. People are waking up. People know. They're aware of this stuff. You know, we had the chief of one of the cops that was at Parliament 2 months ago, when we went to, one of the guys handed him a disc, he turned around and said that the chief had given him that disc before, and he already knew it.
Wow,
so,
that's so good.
Yes.
That's so good. See, we so need, this movement, in a way, what we need to do is appeal to the hearts and minds of the people who are supposed to be protecting us and dealing with these things.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, consider how astonishing this is. Like, here you are, a young man, and you're having to go out there by yourself to face this huge beast, monster.
Yeah.
And like, you're out there trying to kind of wake people up to it, whereas the police, who are paid millions and billions of dollars to protect us and protect society and serve and protect, where are they?
And the media, which has millions of dollars and resources to expose this stuff, where are they?
Yeah.
It's a terrible situation on that aspect. But the thing is, like now, when I first started, yes, I was the guy out on the road by myself. But now there were 30 people there. And you saw there were people on the steps. There were people at the Eternal Flame. There were people at the front gate of Parliament alone. There were people out on Spark Street. Walking around, some went towards Rideau Center. It's organic. It's everybody shows up, everybody has their own idea, and it's really working, and it's being effective. So I'm very happy with how the Ottawa movement has grown.
Yeah.
Internationally, I think what truthaction.org has done is amazing. They've taken Australia never had a truth movement in 2006, you know? Now yeah. they've got four places. The States, it's just ballooned. They had a West Coast convergence in May where mm-hmm. people from Vancouver to San Francisco or San Diego met. I think they met in San Francisco. And their march, actually, they took over a street and they just started marching. It was completely spontaneous. And somebody moved off the sidewalk and they took over the whole street. There were hundreds of people. So
yeah.
And that didn't get reported anywhere. So.
Well, the way I see you, Mark, in my view, you are a soldier of the new age, a new age, not a new world disorder, not a new world psychiatric disorder, but you're the young people, and I was really moved by seeing you out on Parliament Hill there. And you guys, you're facing the terrorists. That's what you're doing. You're the soldiers of the new age. You know, we need a positive image. You and the guys that We Are Change and the 9/11 groups, you're the soldiers of a new age. And you don't go out with weapons and guns and stuff. You just go out armed with truth and trying to wake people up and try to have a heart. Like, how can we let this be done in our society? Allow a group of psychopathic elites to spray people with poisons, to inject poisons into them, to diminish their food supply, to do these genocidal, homicidal things,
and,
you know? In a way, we're the soldiers of the new age and the people in these movements. And
the way I'm looking at it now is I wouldn't feel right not doing it, you know? It's someone has to tell everybody. You can get mad at it, you can deny it, you can do whatever you want, but please at least know about it. That's sort of what I'm focusing on, or the direction I've taken for it is just to get the word out, just so that people, when they hear it or see it, or when some politician's telling them something on the television, at least they know in their head to stop and think, well, why, you know? Or that's not true. You said this earlier. Like, it's very important that people be informed. And I can tell you, I believed the official story of 9/11 for 2 full years and never once even questioned it, never thought that anybody had questioned it. It was what we heard. When it happened, I turned to CNN. I watched it religiously for days to get the whole story, what was going on, because I was so shocked, you know, and I believed
yeah.
it full bore. I was...
Yeah, me too. I was 5 years in it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
and never even knew that anything was going on. You know?
No, me neither. You know, when you learn it, like, it's so overwhelming, really, because it leads to kind of further awakening, and all these deceits we've been told, and all these other awful things that are being done. I mean, it's horrifying a bit. It's like waking up in the nightmare world.
Yeah, yeah, it's like coming out from a dream, yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember when, you know, Britney Spears on the television was an important thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
I mean, I'd like to go back to that world in a way. In a way, it was, you know, it's horrible being in this new world. In a way, it's horrible.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
But it's enlightening. It's
like, you know, it's so astonishing. Like, you know, you can get an Ottawa Senators game out and you get 20,000 people all out there and have, you know, eat hot dogs and drink Coca-Cola and cheer and boo and see a couple fights. And all these people so dedicated to it. But meanwhile, they're being poisoned in their food and their air and the water, and we're taking part in committing genocide over in the Middle East for, you know, all these things happening in the world, and all these people are like,
yeah, and they're
you
not,
can get 20,000 people out to that, but then there's less than 100 on Parliament Hill
yeah.
protesting what's being done
to
us.
They're not stupid people. You can ask them questions about those players, and they can rattle off statistics for hours, you know,
yeah.
and they're accurate. If you match it up with
how
a book,
to live
you're
in
accurate.
The unreal world, you
yeah,
know?
But it's just not important. It's a game,
yeah.
And it's such a small focus. Like you're getting worked up over a 23-year-old kid. Why, like, just put
yeah,
it into perspective. You know?
Everyone, all they care about is men playing games with balls.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
how I describe it. You know, like football, baseball,
yep.
basketball, hockey. You know, or is a puck. You know. And it's like all everybody's so taken by that. Meanwhile, their society's being taken apart,
mm-hmm. and they're having more taxes put on them, and they're being told certain things, and
more and more police and police state tactics.
Yeah, and the tasers are scaring me. That's not good. That's
yeah.
Bad.
Oh no, they want to have chips in everybody. They
yep.
want. They really do.
Yeah,
these people are so
sounds, right
so significantly psychiatrically disturbed.
Yeah,
they're
we're
control
gonna be
dogs freaks.
With chips in their backs, yeah.
Yeah. These people are absolute control freaks. I've never, you know, I worked in prisons for 12 years. I never met anyone who compares to the criminal psychopathology of our these elites and our world leaders. It's astonishing.
It's
the most astonishing thing. I can't believe that still. I'd like, what's the other pill, the blue pill?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I wanted a blue pill.
Yeah, it was comforting anyways, but I am glad that I discovered this stuff, and I am glad that I'm paying attention, because it is a whole other world when you start reading it. There's so much going on.
Oh, yes.
And some of the websites that you can find out there, some of them are, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, but you find some consistent ones, and even then you start looking at Google News, and you start using the search bar, just keywords that you know, like, you'll find things. Like
everywhere, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm glad we're in an age where these things are being exposed, because it doesn't look good in the future, especially if you looked at, like, the movie Endgame, their plans for us. If they've gone and done all these things in the past, what they want to do in the future is just terrifying. So
It is. I mean, we can see we're bordering on an escalation and a further mass murder, mass
murdering
effort.
But I think they
would have
got,
you know,
a lot further along if things hadn't been exposed as quickly between 2003 and 2008 on the internet with the explosion in news.
Yeah.
There was a statistic that said more people were turning to the internet to read online news than they were to look at pornography. And that was the first time ever where online news had surpassed pornography use. So that was fantastic hearing that, you know. So,
well, it's astonishing. I mean, I've done 2 years of research now through the internet, like since waking up, you know, 2 years ago and after Loose Change. And I'm kind of sorry, unfortunately, losing the point I was trying to make. But I was just going to say, I mean, you start watching these documentaries like Endgame, like The Empire of the City, like Len Horowitz on you know, on inoculations and the chemical pharmaceutical mafia and such. And you start watching all these things on the internet, and it's so astonishing, it's so profound, and it's like all these things you're being told about that you've been deceived about. It's an astonishing world, in a way, to begin to realize all these different things.
And you probably wouldn't give it much, you know, clout, except for the fact that when you turn on the actual news, they're promoting these things, as like the movie would tell you they're going to do.
Yeah.
Vaccines being a perfect example, you know. And,
Oh, let's go run out and get our kids with chips in them. So when the pedophiles in the government, take your kid, you can get them back, maybe, you know.
Yeah, well, some of the scary things is like you get on a toll highway, you drive for 2 hours, you get off that toll highway, but if your distance, the average shows that you had to be going 130 kilometers, you also receive a parking ticket or a speeding ticket, you know? So total
they want to have more and more control over every aspect of our lives. It's astonishing. Like, it's so useless. Like, you know, all the money being wasted on this all the time.
They have,
you know,
the backscatter x-rays.
It's just like, it's like taking all this money from the public to produce something which produces nothing. It doesn't give us anything to eat. It doesn't give us oil. It doesn't give us shelter. It doesn't give us protection. It's all completely unnecessary, useless waste of public funds.
Mm-hmm. But they
and they're taxing to the Canadians, you know, one-third of a half almost of everything you make is taken up in taxes to pay these people.
Yeah, and if you ask most Canadians what they think their taxes are important for, it's always health care. And that's important, yes, but there's so much else that they spend it on that you don't even know. You know about
the healthcare.
And even
the healthcare has become completely corrupted. Harper spent $300 million to give this Gardasil poison to the young women in eastern Canada as part of a eugenics program. Okay? So we're even paying for the poisoning of the young women and men maybe in Canada.
Yeah,
I mean, it's astonishing.
And we didn't have a choice.
No.
No.
And the chemtrails go over. Can you go to the police and say, can you ask those people to stop poisoning us and spraying their chemtrails on all the land and destroying the wildlife and the soil and getting it on all our food? Can you ask these people to please stop this? You know? And no one will do anything. It's astonishing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is dark and scary at times, but there is a lot of beauty left, and I'm hoping that all I'm really hoping is that public opinion shifts, and that when one of these guys gets up and one of these people gets up and says, you know, blah, 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 this is what we're going to do, that 5 out of 10 people turn to them and say, no, that's wrong. You're doing this because of this, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's what I want to see. I want to see that at, you know, town hall meetings. And
that's so much what we need. You see, like, we can't fight this revolution. Like, we can't go out and fight and bombing and weapons and that. It can't work. It can't work. We need to change it.
Yeah.
We need to get these people to turn around. We want the police to serve and protect the public. That's what they're supposed to do. We want them to obey their oaths of office. You know, that's what we need. You know, we want doctors to follow the Hippocratic Oath and do no harm.
Yeah.
You know, and not just by making more money, by giving more inoculation, they make more money and they're bought out.
Or prescribing more drugs. You know, that's another one that's gone out of control.
Yeah.
The amount of the pharmaceutical company, how many people they've got on different prescription drugs, it's huge.
Terrible.
Yeah.
It's big business. It's huge business again. So all these things, which are done for the benefits of the corporate mafia, but which jeopardize the health of Canadians. Like Health Canada doesn't protect the health of Canadians. You know, they're covering up all these criminal things being done.
There has been things that have been exposed, yeah, and there has been people that, I think it was Dr. Shiv Chopra, or Shiv. He was one that he got fired from Health Canada for exposing something. I'm not sure what.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's someone should call Health Canada, ask them why did they chemtrail us, and then just see how much Health Canada cares about the health of Canadians.
Yeah. Well, chemtrails,
I mean, it's a joke
too. Yeah.
I mean, how can they? How closely have they examined all the scientific evidence for the effectiveness of Gardasil? And it's possible ramifications and disastrous effects for people.
Yeah. Well, it's
terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah, I think that things aren't. It's not the same playing field that it was in 1995 as far as information. More people are informed, and I think that's great. I think that's the start, and that's what's going to make the difference. And the more people that, you know, turn off the television, really. and just turn to the internet and read. You don't. Not all of it's true. Not all of. There's a lot of disinformation, and there's a lot of people. But you can sift through that pretty easily. You can tell what's just by if you see it on 5 sites and they're all reputable sites. Well, you know, then it starts to look more than if you just see it on some crazy blog somewhere. You know.
Unfortunately, it's true, and it's there. Like if you begin to look into it, there's all kinds of people now waking up and sharing information. It's out there.
Yeah, that's great.
This is a worldwide truth movement, and I would like to say, Mark, we're coming down. We just got a couple minutes. I'd like you once more to give out your website.
Sure. My website is www.ottawa911truth.com. And the international website is www.truthaction.org.
Okay.
Excellent sites. Yeah.
And then you'll be out of Parliament Hill August 11th.
August 11th.
You invite people to come out and support you.
Excellent. Yes, I would love it if everybody came out and supported us, because this is the last Truth Action before everybody from across Canada and in the United States, they come to gather on Parliament Hill. There's another gathering happening at the same time in New York. So
yeah.
We're only 5 hours apart, so we're standing in solidarity with that. And
on the 11th of every month,
of course, we stand in solidarity with everybody in the world who's coming out on that day.
Yeah.
If you go to the Truth Action Forum, truthaction.org, you can already see where Ottawa is up on the front page. We made the front page because we had the picture. We got that group photo. There's 21 people in that photo, and that wasn't all the people that were there. There's a lot of people missing.
Yeah.
And so it just shows you a small fraction. You have to see the event. And within a couple of days, we will have a video coming out for our event yesterday. So.
Yeah, great. And okay, and the one other thing was David Ray Griffin at the Ottawa Public Library, Metcalf and Laurier on August 12th, is it?
21st, no. August 21st, 6:30 p.m.
21st, 6:30, 6:30, 6, sorry.
Yeah, 6:30 p.m., and it's ovcapa@gmail.com to reserve your ticket.
Well, I hope, Mark, you might come back on the show the week subsequent to your August 11th. Well, how about the show after that again?
That would be fantastic. I'd greatly appreciate that. Thank you, Christopher. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and like I say, Mark, you know, you people, I was really moved by seeing you. You're a young group out there, and it's like, wow, at least there's some young men in our community who stand up for truth. I see you as soldiers of a new age, and you have to have courage to do what you're doing. And courage means to have a new heart, and there's something about you. You have a heart still, and that's why you dare to do that.
Yeah,
so I'd really like to honor you and your group for what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, Mark.
Okay.
Okay, I'll let you go.
Thank you. You have a good night.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Okay, bye.
Okay, so, wow, that's so inspiring. I'm glad that young men out there like Mark and this is happening across our nations and around the world. Around the world, people are kind of waking up to these things, and we need people to turn around. We can't have a fight. We need to have reconciliation and, you know, the truth coming out and people turning back from what they've become part of. You know, we all got to kind of say enough is enough. Let's stop this craziness. It's not necessary. We don't need to reduce the world's population. Don't have the poverty consciousness that you're not going to have enough food or something for yourself. You don't need to be so greedy as pigs to want to enslave human beings. You know, there's abundance for all. And the real value in life is within your inner life and your soul life. What does it benefit you to gain the world but to lose your soul? Nothing. So remember yourself. Remember yourself. Let's all be brave and seek reconciliation in our society. Okay, thank you. Be back in 2 weeks. Thank you, BBS Radio. Goodbye.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.